Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, Metsville. This is Rich Farrago, known as CT Mets Fan on Twitter, and you are listening to the Metsian podcast with Sam, Rich, and Mike, and we're thrilled that you are giving us some time to talk New York Mets baseball with us on a day that the Mets are off. And I think it's rare that Mets fandom agrees on anything, but I think we could all agree that a day off for this franchise, for this team, is pretty well needed now. We'll talk about the reasons why. And in order to do all that, to start to unpack all things New York Mets, I'd like to bring on my co-conspirators in podcasting. First, let me start. Where do I want to go? Well, let's go to of the two boroughs, the one that's closer to me is Manhattan. So we'll start there. And we'll bring in the CEO, the grand poobah of the Metsian podcast. And we'll ask Mr. Sam Maxwell where we find him tonight. It's always interesting. He could be in Manhattan, where I think he might be. He could be in upstate New York. We don't know. So, Sam, where are you tonight?
Well, it is funny. Of course, you know, I'm from Manhattan. I moved there when I was 10 after, even with a mother from Brooklyn, an interesting up and down, first single-digit life up and down the East Coast. But honestly, I have been assimilated by the Brooklyn Borg. And more consistently than usual, I am in Flatbush once again, Rich. So here we are. You have two of the four settled on the borough of Brooklyn, former city.
Well, there you go. And with that said, let's bring on our other Brooklyn person who is a permanent resident of that particular borough, and Mr. Mike LeCollin. So, Mike, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Hello, Rich. Hello, Sam. Hello, Metsville. And as you say, Rich, a much-needed day off, a welcome day off. So let's get going.
Let's unpack it. And in order to do that, we actually have a very special guest with us tonight, and that is Mr. Anthony Rivera. So Anthony comes to us. He is a writer for FanSided, the Rising Apple blog, which is part of FanSided, and also the Subway to Shea podcast. So, Anthony, thank you for joining us tonight on our podcast, and how are you tonight?
Oh, I'm so happy to be on with you guys again. I had a lot of fun last time, and anytime you guys ask me to come on, I really appreciate it, and ready to talk some Mets. So that's what we do best, so I'm ready to go.
And looking forward to it. The Rangers are in between periods right now, 0-0 in a nail-biter kind of a game. So yeah, I'm sure we'll all have one eye on that as we're going through. So let's start talking about this. And before we do that, though, I think I have to give a hat tip to Mr. Adam Siegel, who does that wonderful 80s-sounding jingle that you hear at the beginning of every Metsian podcast. So thank you, Adam. And all right, so let's jump into it. So, gentlemen, what I'm going to do is sort of set the scene and let you comment on that scene. So the Mets had won six in a row going through last Wednesday, 8 days ago, and everything was looking good. You know, they beat the living heck out of the Nationals. That's great. And they had a 10.5 game lead on their closest competitors, the Atlanta Braves. They went on the road to the West Coast, which we knew would be a bit of a challenge. So since that time, the Mets have gone 3-4, and giving credit where it's due, the Sunday game, we can maybe talk about that a little bit. I do want to talk about one thing about that game. The Sunday game was thrilling, and the Mets have gone 3-4 on that road trip, which is, you know, it's like not great, obviously. It's not the worst thing in the world. But in that time, both the Braves and Phillies on this afternoon, so Braves and Phillies have won 7 in a row, and the Braves are ahead in their game right now against the Pirates. So the Mets lead has shrunk from 10.5 to 7-6 in the loss column. And if the Braves should hold on and win, the Mets will be 6.5 games ahead of the Braves. And that would be 4 games lost in the standings in a little over a week. So, and also the Phillies are there too. You know, they're down, so I think they're 9 games out going into action tonight.
because they play the Mets or Idols. So with that said, optimist, pessimist. Mike, I'm going to start with you. The optimist says, well, you know, that's why you build a big lead. That's the benefit of, you know, beating up on the team you're supposed to beat up on, build that lead. When the other guys get hot, you're able to withstand it. They will cool off. Every team does. Mets will just, you know, pick right back up. That's the optimist says. Pessimist says, these are still the Mets. Mets have, and these are still the Braves. The Braves have a history of being, you know, Lucy to the Mets, Charlie Brown, and pulling the football out. And the Mets also have injuries, which we'll unpack that in a moment. So, Mike, where are you? Let's start with a very general question. I'll ask all of you the same question. Do you take the, it happens, it's baseball, it ebbs and flows, or do you take the perspective of, all right, you know, I have to dab the brow a little sweat accumulating there. Where are you, Mike?
I'm the optimist, Rich. I think we're in good shape. This is why you get off to good starts, to give yourself room to maneuver, to give yourself room to incur injuries and sustain and overcome. So I like where we are. I like that the division is heating up. I like that the Braves are picking it up. I like that the Phillies are getting hot. I like to see those intra-division battles. It makes the regular season fun as a baseball fan. Sure, adversity is knocking at the Mets' door, but, you know, they're answering, and they're hanging in there, and they're hanging tough. And, Rich, we went into the season saying that, you know, money, Steve Cohen's money, needed to prop this team up over the next year, 2 years, what have you, until they get everything in order. Now that the regular season is underway and we're in month three, well, we're seeing that the hitting needs to overcome some of the things that are going on with our pitching. So different aspects of the game are compensating for some of our more depleted aspects, and that's a good thing. So I'm the optimist. We're still 17 games over 500. That's a good place to be. I like where we are. If we could just battle through June, I think we'll be in good shape. But again, just to reiterate, this is why you get off to those good starts. This way, if you incur some problems and some rough road, here we are in June, you're better equipped to handle it and overcome like they are.
So Mike is like the Tyler McGill of the podcast when they said that he's a low heartbeat guy. Mike's not worried at all. I love it. So, all right, Stan, let's go to you next. And we'll peel back some of the, like we would say in the Saber world, some of the secondary metrics on this stuff. But so, Stan, where are you? Are you low heartbeat, or is your heartbeat getting up there a little bit?
I mean, it always sucks to think in the back of your head, what if all the naysayers turn out to be right? But, you know, you, especially in a year where you have so much confidence and all the good signs are pointing towards a different narrative here. I think, like, I want to go in the direction that you talked about with the Braves versus the Mets. And before this started, they looked at what the Mets have to do, and it was the Dodgers, the Padres, and the Angels. And the Angels are a whole other subject that we will get into because, my God. But at the time when we were talking about this, that the Angels were a 500, over 500 team in contention, and they have major trouble going on right now. So, again, separate subject. However, if you look at the Braves and what they were having to deal with, they all of a sudden at the time that the Mets were going on their most challenging trip so far, the Braves were playing who they've been playing, the Rockies, the Pirates, and I don't know the rest of their schedule. But I remember seeing it, and everybody was like, the Braves had this an easy direction to at least collecting a string of wins, which is what they are doing, and being able to take advantage of the potential for the Mets to falter, you know, under better competition themselves. So what has happened? Well, better than other Mets teams in the past, but not to the standard of what we saw Sunday, like you mentioned, Rich. Because when the Mets show that they are contending, my God, they pull off a game like Sunday, which really is the most important win of the year, no matter what that FNY poll showed about the Phillies' seven-run comeback. I get that because that was improbable. But the most important win so far as I'm concerned, was that Sunday game against the Dodgers. And when you see, like, you know, the Padres, after game one, as far as I'm concerned, they were like, all right, we need to get our act together. Like, we're going to do anything in this series. And unfortunately, it coincided with some issues with the Mets lineup injury-wise. So, the 3-4, especially considering, like, I hope that they at least go .500 on the road trip, although I think it's an 11-game, it's an 11-gamer, if I'm correct, so, or whatever. Anyway, one way or another, if they can somewhat be 3-4 or .500 at the end of this road trip, I still call that a win, because this is a very challenging one, and I'd like them to be a winning, you know, have a winning road trip, but they're still most likely, no matter how much the Phillies and the Braves are, you know, continue to win, they should still have good standing coming home after the Angels trip. And I'll say lastly regarding the Angels trip, I don't like the fact that they've lost 14 in a row. I don't even know if they're playing tonight. I don't like the fact that they've lost 14 in a row going into this series, because as much as I think clearly the Mets are most likely the better team, and we'll get more into the Angels later, but it still worries me that they're due. Just like that part of my Mets fandom, and looking at them coming in just when the Angels are going through a historic losing period, it's like, oh, that's exactly when they're going to turn it on, isn't it?
Well, we could talk about that Angels series, and they do play tonight against the Red Sox, so we'll see what happens, and, you know, Trout's day-to-day. And but, Anthony, let's bring you in here. You've been, you know, patiently waiting on this one. So are you of the opinion that, you know, that's why you have a big lead, the Mets are a different Mets, crop of Mets, and it's no problem? Or are you at all concerned? Where do you stand?
I'm not concerned yet. I think I'm in the optimistic phase right now. They're 7 up on Atlanta. Probably, like you said, they're going to be 6.5 up with Atlanta playing Pittsburgh. And they're 9 up on Philadelphia, two teams that are hot right now. I still think it's really early in the season for this hot streak to continue that long. I don't think it's going to continue throughout, you know, most of the rest of this season. I'm actually more impressed with Philadelphia than I am with Atlanta. Philadelphia has beaten the Giants, and they've swept the Brewers in their last series. And, you know, that's big for me, because the Brewers are one of the big contending teams out there in the National League. And you know, the Braves, they've taken care of business against the Diamondbacks and the Rockies and the Athletics, and now they're probably going to take care of business against Pittsburgh. They'll go to Washington and Chicago. But then they got a tough stretch at the end of the month. They're going to play the Giants, they're going to play the Dodgers, and they're going to play Philly. So now Philly and Atlanta playing at the end of the month, and I think a couple of times in July, they're going to cancel each other out playing each other so much. You know, the Mets have already played the Phillies so many times and the Nationals so many times. And I think that the Mets are going to be okay. We're never going to run away with this division. We all knew that the Braves were a good team, and now they're even better with Acuña playing well. Philly is what they are. You know, they're going to get those streaks because their team can hit, but they don't have a great bullpen. And their pitching staff is okay right now. They're on a streak right now because they made a switch. A new culture is being put on the team with the new manager. I can't see that switch lasting all season long with the same exact roster. I think eventually when they start playing really good teams, they're going to struggle. And I think Philly plays, they're going to play a tough Marlins team coming up. they're going to play the Diamondbacks in Washington, but they're going to play San Diego for four games. So it's going to be tough for these teams to sustain. That's why they're beating up on the teams they're supposed to. That's what the Mets did earlier on in the season. They beat up on the teams that they had to beat up on, including Philly. And they've only played the Braves once, so that's, you know, they'll have to contend with them later on in the season. But I think everything has just come together in an odd sort of way this month, right? June is always the month where the Mets struggle. The Braves and the Phillies have an easier schedule than the Mets do right now. The Mets haven't had really a day off until, you know, right now. They're off today, and that's really been it. They've had to play the Dodgers for a lot of games and the Padres, and they're on the West Coast, which is, you know, rough. They didn't even get a day off in between the West Coast. So that's, you know, the Mets struggling right now. They had the injuries the other day, which thank goodness it's not serious. But I think starting Friday, Tyler McGill comes back. We got good news on Starling Marte and Pete Alonso being day-to-day. Scherzer is starting to ramp up. He's ahead of schedule. DeGrom is working his way back. They're not going to give us too much on DeGrom because, you know, the media, and they're all going to expect things to happen. And Buck's been good about how he's handled the media and how he's handled these injuries. It's a different team. If it was last year, I'd be worried because we don't have a veteran manager running the helm. We don't have a guy like Buck Showalter and the coaching staff that they have right now, the general manager and the owner. It's a different team right now. And whereas last year was more of the evaluation phase in Steve Cohen's first year, this year the Mets are going to go for it. There's no doubt that they're going to go for it. And whether it's getting bullpen help, getting another starting pitcher, definitely need somebody off the bench. Another bench piece would work well. They're going to be in this all year. They're not going to win this outright. This isn't, you know, the 2006 Mets where they, you know, ran away with the division really early. These teams are not terrible. The Braves are the world champions, so you can't count them out. Philly is always going to contend with the Mets. The Marlins are going to give the Mets a hard time because they've always done that. So it's not going to be an easy road to a playoff spot here. But I have very good feeling about this season, and I think that you should only right now be optimistic about what's going on with this Mets. If you're going to be, you know, pessimistic, yeah, there's always going to be struggle. There's always going to be problems, and we can only do what we can with this Mets team, and hopefully they can continue and get back on a winning streak against these Angels who have been struggling all season long.
All right. Now, you touched on a lot there, and so a lot of stuff I wanted to get to, which we still can. So with regard to, you know, Anthony touched on the schedule, and the Braves are. They're in a soft part. You know, they have the Pirates now. They have the Nationals coming up, and they have the Cubs. But as he said, they play the Giants and Dodgers at the end of the month. The Mets have the Brewers coming up when they get home. Then they play the Marlins. Us and the Marlins are bad, not that it's cakewalk. But, you know, the Mets have – not only have they played the tougher teams internationally, they've played them on the road. So we'll see how this all plays out. Now, I want to go – now that we're on the road trip, I want to go to the Sunday game. And a couple of things I want to talk about with that, because I think that was a – whether or not it was, you know, as exciting as the Philadelphia game or, you know, who knows. But it was a very important, very exciting game. I want to go to this one, though. Buck put Diaz in the game in the bottom of the eighth inning because it was the top of the Dodger lineup. And the Dodger lineup is pretty long anyway, but the top of the lineup is really, really good with you know, you've got Trey Turner up there. You've got Freddie Freeman. You've got Mookie Betts. So Buck decided, hey, look, this could be the inning, you know, so I'm going to put my guy in here. And as Buck said in the game, if he had a short inning, I would have put him out for the ninth, but he didn't, so I didn't. And which, you know, Buck was taking a calculated gamble because if it was a high pitch inning, high leverage inning, as they say, he knew he'd have to go into the ninth with something less than his closer, which is what happened, and they tied the game off of Lugo. So, Sam, I'll start with you. What do you think about, you know, people said, oh, Buck's too traditional, he's, you know, an older guy. Here he is bucking, no pun intended, bucking the system and going with his closer in the eighth inning because that was the meat of the order. And we hear that kind of conversation all the time. The save, although the stat is one thing, but the save of the game could come at any point. So what do you think about that decision he made?
I thought it showed his experience. Seth Lugo has to get the job done, bottom line. And that's a whole other discussion. That's not what you asked me. So, you know, I think it's ironic that the decision Buck made had a lot to do with making sure that he had his closer. And because, had his closer in the San Diego series. And because of what happened in the San Diego series, Edwin Diaz had to be pitching in the bullpen in the 13-2 game, where he needed to, you know, ironically get some work. I don't disagree with the decision at all. I don't think you can second-guess him based off of what happened. I mean, based off of my logic, do you say that Seth Lugo has to be able to get the outs in the eighth inning if he is supposed to get the outs in the ninth inning? Sure. However, I understand Buck's logic. He was treating it like a playoff game, and you know what? It kind of was. It was a regular season playoff game. Like, you got to treat games, certain games, like playoff games, and he was just showing how – I mean, like, you see him. He's literally – like, every time we pan into Buck, he is so engaged in every single thing happening. He's always talking to somebody, whoever that is. And if you notice at the end of last night's game, one of the things I loved about last night's game and watching it till the end was the fact that him and Mark Canha were yucking it up about something. Like, I liked the fact that there was some positivity still, that it was just like, yeah, we're here. It's the end of the game. We're probably not coming back with two outs. I mean, you know, Gary teased the idea of coming back down 11 at the beginning of it, but all of a sudden we're, you know, they got some men on, but we got the two outs. And I that's one of the things that has kept me optimistic. And I know I've gone a lot of different places there, but that's what I love about Buck. I love that he's different on many occasions. And I love the fact that him and Mark Canha were just like, hey, what do you think about this? And what do you think about, like, he's always engaged. You want a manager to always be like that.
Yeah. No, I think it's been said, Anthony, we'll go to you next, that Buck plays chess while everybody else plays checkers. You know, he's thinking many moves ahead. It was a bit of a risk because if the Mets don't win that game, we're still talking about it. I promise you, we're still talking about it. We're still talking about how he relied on Seth Lugo, who at best has been inconsistent, instead of Diaz, what the hell was up with that? So where were you with it, Anthony?
I agreed with the decision to bring in Diaz. The problem I had was him taking him out after only 15 pitches. I mean, he got through the heart of the lineup with 15 pitches. I think at the very least, you send him back out there to start the inning. This is where, you know, people are going to say, well, Buck is still the same guy that, you know, blew that playoff game in Baltimore. I don't want that to come across anymore. And I know we don't have the greatest bullpen right now, and definitely this does fall on Seth Lugo to get the three outs that you were supposed to get. I mean, it wasn't a one-run lead. You had a two-run lead. You got to get these outs at the very least. And I was more impressed with Adonis Medina, who had to come in with a runner on base, because, you know, the 10th inning has that ghost runner rule. And he got the big three outs from the big three batters that were coming up. I think Dave Roberts helped taking the bat out of the hands of Trey Turner. But I agree with him bringing in Diaz. I would have at least let him start the inning. I think that's a problem that I had last year with Luis Rojas, is he would bring in a reliever, and let's say Aaron Loop would get one out, and in one or two pitches, and then he would take him out and he'd be done for the game. Or he'd have a reliever going, and as soon as he starts to struggle, that reliever's still in there and they haven't warmed up the bullpen yet. Here, we have Lugo warming up, so you send Diaz out there and see if he can go. I do understand the rationale, the strategic thing that Buck was talking about after the game, thinking ahead, thinking about the a Padres series, but, you know, you can only think ahead so far. You have to win the game that you're playing first. Then you worry about the rest of the week. If somebody else has to come in and save because Diaz got that two-inning save, then so be it. But once you get to the playoffs, how far can you think of the future without winning the three or four game series that you have to win? So I think that's what they have to think about, you know, going forward. Win the game at hand first. Worry about the next game and the next series when that time comes.
That's fair. I think you know, like we say, too much of a good thing can be a bad thing. And if you're always thinking ahead that much, that's a good thing, right? But at the same time, if you're thinking ahead so much that you're not thinking about the game you have to win that day, that could be a problem. So, Mike, where were you with it, the decision to use Diaz?
Now, I don't disagree with Buck's decisions, nor do I disagree with anything that's been said so far. Buck brought in Diaz to protect the 4-2 lead. They had just scored three runs to take the lead. And, Rich, we know, we go back, you know, that was a fireman situation. The fire was in the eighth inning, so he brought him in, and he doused the fire. So I agree with Sam and Anthony in that Lugo, he needs to get those three outs. He really does, and he failed to do that. But the way I started off the show in saying that, you know, it's up to the lineup to out-hit some of these mistakes, well, they did just that, and J.D. Davis drove home the winning run. So it's important that the lineup you know, continues to out-hit some of these mistakes because there will be more. But I have no qualms whatsoever with Buck Showalter's decisions. That was a fireman move, and I'm cool with it.
All right. So, okay, I want to talk a little bit more about that. So the Mets are 3-4 on the road trip, and that happens. You know, they're playing tough teams on the road, and I think it's exacerbated a bit, at least to me, because the Braves and Phillies are winning. 3-4 really isn't, you know, obviously it's not awful, and they are playing on the West Coast against good teams, all well and good. But let's take a look at some of the other things that might be going into it. So is it really 3-4, or is it really more this stuff? Gary was talking last night about how since Scherzer went down, the Mets' starting rotation ERA is close to 5. It's like, I think it's 4.78. So they've been winning, and that's great. I think he said they were 13-6. The Rangers just scored 13-7 since Scherzer went down. That's really darn good. I'd sign for that in a heartbeat. I'll take 13 out of any 20 games. But at the same time, like Mike said, there are some symptoms of a cold in there because the starters – they have to out-hit the starters. The starters' ERA is 4.78. You have that. And now we also have day-to-day status for Pete Alonso and Starling Marte. I completely agree with Keith. I'm not so worried about Pete. Even if he doesn't play all weekend, let the swelling go down. By Tuesday, he'll be okay. I'm very worried about Marte, a guy who relies on his legs. It's a very big part of his game. And as we know, quad injuries do not heal quickly. We all remember Cespedes, the Mets in 17. The Mets kept pushing him out there, and the Mets kept pushing Cespedes out there, and he just kept re-injuring his quad. So we don't want to see a repeat of that. So here's my question to you guys. It's not so much 3-4. It's not so much losing a few games off the lead. What about some of the other stuff? What about the fact that starters are struggling? What about the fact that you have an injury to Marte, an injury to Alonso? You're still playing down in the rotation, although you probably will get McGill back this weekend. So let's talk about some of the deeper issues, something that might be going on beneath the surface. And to do that, we'll start with you, Anthony. Do you have any concerns about this stuff?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the biggest concern for most of the season when the Mets were doing so well was the bullpen. And that's still somewhat of a concern. We saw with Lugo, we saw, you know, Drew Smith give up a big home run in this series. So that's always been a concern. But now you're adding more injuries and, you know, a rough starting rotation, which, you know, he took a lot of blame for it, rightfully so. Chris Bassett's got to pitch better. I've wrote about this for Rising Apple, how I thought that he would be, you know, kind of the next, you know, favorite player for a lot of fans because, you know, the way he talks and how he's this kind of bulldog pitcher. But the last couple of times out, he has just been awful. It's been rough for him. I think he's going to get out of it for sure. He's a better pitcher than that. I think what's really hurting him is another injury, and that's the injury to James McCann. James McCann has been a really good framer, a really good thrower. He's got that cannon, so to say. And it's been rough losing James McCann. You see the struggle with Chris Bassett trying to get the signals across to a Mazika and to Nito, and I think that's really hurt him. Since he's left, I think, what is his ERA has been over 7 right now. So as much as people are not fans of James McCann because he's not a bat, his most important aspect is behind that plate. They need him behind that plate because you can't have Nito and Mazika behind him. Nito has to be the backup, whereas McCann has to be starting and helping out this rotation. They were pitching so much better with him in there, and I know there's been injuries, but even with McGill out and with Scherzer out, the pitching staff has been, you know, somewhat decent. And when you have to rely on Trevor Williams and David Peterson, we shouldn't be doing that. It should be Chris Bassett should be leading the charge. And actually, the guy who's leading the charge is Carlos Carrasco, Cookie. He's, what, 7-1 right now? He's pitching very well. He's really the guy that's been taking over this rotation and leading the rotation. You're going to get what you're going to get from a Taiwan Walker. So it is what it is with him. He's kind of, you know, he's going to have his up games, his down games. And I actually, to be fair to Taiwan Walker, I thought he pitched a pretty decent game against the Dodgers. They just couldn't hit. He kept them in the game. It was only a 2-0 loss. I thought he pitched very well. This was a really rough game, his where they lost a 7-0. So he's been kind of hit by that that DeGrom bug where the Mets are just not scoring for him. So that's been a little tough for him. But Bassett's really got to step up. He's really got to turn it around. And I can't wait for McCann to come back because Mazika is just, I don't know. He's not cutting it for me. I know he's had some games where he's hit a home run or he's scored a couple of runs, but you really need McCann behind the plate. He's a better framer, and he helps out with the defense. So that's the bigger worry for me. Starling Marte, like you said, his quad, that's going to be an issue if they can't get him going. But I think we're a different organization now, whereas in Cespedes had to be thrown out there. I don't feel like these guys are going to throw Starling Marte out there if he's hurt. The same thing with Pete Alonso. We've seen in games where look at the frustration. I know I'm going off in a little bit, but this is a very important part to what Buck does. Look at the frustration that Jeff McNeil had when he struggled hitting. Buck took him right out, and since then, he's batting over 300 right now. So there are some nuances to where he would not have been taken out last year. It's a very different run organization and a very different run team. So I have no, you know, reason to believe that they won't take care of Marte and Pete and all those guys. They're going to look, even with DeGrom, they're taking their time, bringing him back. Scherzer as well, they're taking their time. I think all will work out in the end. It's just been a rough month. So that's, you know, that's the way, I guess, the cookie crumbles, sort of say.
Hey, Rich.
Oh, Rich.
Dollar in the jar, Rich.
Oh, my bad. Oh, dollar in the jar. let's go to Mike. I'm sorry about that. Let's go to Mike on this one. Mike, your thoughts on the underlying, do we have underlying problems, and do you have any concerns about the injuries to Alonso Marte and the fact that the starting pitching hasn't been good? Where are you with all that?
I do have concerns. My anxiety level is high, but I'm controlling them. Again, I'm going to take this optimistic attitude. Insofar as the pitching, think about this. We have Chris Bassett. We have Carlos Carrasco. We have Tawan Walker. We have Tyler Megill. We have David Peterson. We have Trevor Williams. We have six pitchers available to us right now that can go out there and pitch a victory on any given day. When over the last couple of years have we been able to say that with the reinforcements that they brought into Flushing? We haven't. So we're in a good spot considering that Scherzer and DeGrom are on the way. So I'm just asking for these guys to go out there and battle this month, you know, and then it's going to be up to Billy Epler to figure it all out and come up with a plan for the trade deadline. But pitching-wise, you know, better days are ahead. That's the way I see it. And these guys, they're feisty. They'll go out and they'll give us a chance. No other team out there outside of the Dodgers, and if you want to pick one or two others, you know, are dominating opponents from the mound. I think the Mets, if anything, are best suited, you know, to march down that path. So I'm okay with the pitching. I'm just crossing my fingers and hoping for the best and hoping that, you know, the big guys and the big 1-2 punch get back in a timely manner, in a healthy manner, and get us through down the home stretch. Offensively, big problem with Starling Marte. I fear any kind of long-term injury. That's frightening to me. I'll be honest with you. But I'm not going to oversweat it. Hopefully things will turn out okay. The Mets are at a point, like I said, where they have to out-hit these mistakes and out-hit some of their deficiencies. And right now, we've roughly played, what, a third of the season. We got three guys who are trending towards 100 RBI seasons, Marte being one of them. So I got my fingers crossed. I just want to see them battle through June. I'm not going to look any farther than that. And Rich, if we play 500 ball the rest of the month, we're still 17 games over 500. I don't know if the Braves or the Phillies are going to be able to say that.
Very good perspective. Sam, where are you with all this stuff? With the injuries and the starting pitching, being near 5 ERA since Scherzer went down?
There's so many places that I just got set up for, and I think I'm going to start with a deep cut of Patrick Mazzucca. If we remember what Patrick Mazzucca made his folk hero status on, it was basically working a walk. And I think, other than the ambush of a home run that I believe tied the game, he needs to get back to that. Because if he's to stand any chance of having any value as somebody coming up on the depth chart with catching, as we talk about all this stuff, and I didn't think about it until Anthony mentioned it, but they are obviously missing James McCann. And I have my entire I've really only brought this up to Mike, but I have my trade that I want to the Mets to make involving a catcher that still works with Francisco Alvarez in the pipeline, as far as I'm concerned, but I'm just teasing that now. So when I think about, like, yeah, Patrick Mazzucca has not held his own weight, and he needs to somewhat get back to, you know, Eric Chavez, who's done wonders for so many players, needs to kind of look at this guy as long as he's around and try to figure out how he can be more effective at the plate, because even Tomas Nito is able to have his days where he is just laser-focused at the plate. And Starlin Marte, Rich, I think it's interesting that you brought up Yoannis Cespedes, because I think they both have very similar strong body similarity, like where they're such beasts that remind you almost of Bo Jackson in the way that they're just so strong, even without like, who knows what they're, you know, like, Bo, like, all he ever did was just, like, pick up a boar, whatever those legends went. But, I, you know, Despotus always somewhat reminded me of Bo in terms of body type, but you're right about the legs, and it does concern me. However, you know, if we're giving the credit to this being a different franchise, then we have to give them credit for actually observing this as day to day, as opposed to what the Wilfon, especially Jeff, used to observe it as, which was get our stars back as soon as possible and have them rehab in Port St. Lucie mostly. But that's a whole nother episode. So if we're giving them credit for being a better run organization, we should give them credit for being a little bit tighter in their observance of injuries. And there were so many other different places we could go there, but I'm just going to cut myself off and say bravo to everybody. You guys are igniting my Metsian thought brain.
Well, I like the part about how they'll handle injuries differently because there's a new regime, not only Steve Cohen, but also Billy Eppler, you know, and you don't have Jeff Wilpon pushing Cespedes out there, pushing Pedro Martinez out there, and Pedro, you know, clearly wasn't able to go and all of that, or wasn't physically at a place where he should have been pushed out there in a meaningless game. So I like that. That does give me some encouragement. I would like to see Marte on the IL, frankly. I'd rather shut him down, force him to shut down. If they had put him on the IL, which they still can, they could have Wednesday, today's no day off. You have a day off Monday. So two of the 10 days, you wouldn't need him anyway, and just shut him down and make sure if he truly feels good like he says he does, make him feel great in 10 days and then put him back out there, because I don't want to miss him for the whole summer. So we'll see how that plays out. So you're listening to the Metsian Podcast with Sam, Rich, and Mike, and our special guest, Anthony Rivera from Fansided, Rising Apple, as well as Subway to Shea Podcast. Gentlemen, we've gone about 45 minutes. We have about 15 minutes left to go. And I do want to touch on the upcoming series against the Angels. This has Mets written all over it for so many reasons. The Angels, as we touched on, have lost 14 in a row. They're playing the Sox tonight, and the Sox are playing pretty good baseball. So let's just say for fun, the game's probably just starting, that the Sox win, and it's 15 in a row. Now you've got the fact that Mets are going in there against a team that can't get out of its own way, just fired its manager. It would be so Mets-like to go in there and lay an egg. And then there's a Noah Syndergaard factor. Noah, when the Angels announced their rotation just a couple hours ago, Noah's not in it, and he should be. Noah would be in line to pitch one of these games, but he's not going to. Now, we don't know if he's ducking the Mets, or if you remember, there have been times when pitchers, like the Reds didn't pitch Harvey against the Mets when they had him, because you want to avoid the media circus and not put that kind of pressure on the guys. So who knows what the real reason is, but we will not see Noah Syndergaard this weekend. And then secondly, it's a like in the NFL, a trap game. You know, you're playing a less opponent, and then the next game, you're playing somebody really good. So this could be a trap series for the Mets. No Noah. Let's take it from there. Sam, why don't you kick us off on this one?
It's just stupid to, sorry to force my opinion, but I just think that it's just stupid. It's just, we don't know exactly what, but, like, everybody kept saying he was supposed to be pitching ESPN games nationally against the Mets. What is this organization doing unless he's injured? That's all I guess I can say specifically about that, because it disappointed me when I saw you say something like that. It just very much disappointed me, Rich. I forget if you ask me broadly about the Angels series, I'm just so very much disappointed.
I think we all are. I think we wanted to see Noah. I think it would be great for baseball. If it was a Sunday night game, I'm sure the ratings would be very good. It would probably be good anyway. You have two big markets, but I mean, put yourself in the Angels situation. They're a circus already. Do you think it was a good move?
I guess that's the idea. So the Angels have just, you know, it's like all of a sudden, oh, Joe Madden's out there. You know, like, he's going to get paid. He's just going to be chilling. He's going to be taking bike rides, as he always does around every city he goes to. So I'm sure, you know, with the money coming in, he's just going to RV around for the summer and see what's going on around the United States that everybody says is the most divisive place in the world now. So, you know, I don't know. I hope, you know, like you said, the Angels game might be getting started right now. Hopefully the Angels can win this game. That means that we can sweep them and they could lose, you know, 18 out of 20 or whatever. Hopefully I didn't just jinx it, but that's my take on the entire Angels series, is that it is totally set up for a Mets dud, but they did just get this day off. They know who they are. We know who they are, and they can take care of business.
Very good. Mike, we'll go to you next on this. Do you see this as a potential trap series, and do you have any particular thoughts on Noah not taking the start when, going by the math, he would be in line to pitch this weekend?
Yeah, Noah not making a start. That's disappointing. What's even more disappointing is that the Friday game is going to be on Apple TV. Can this be a trap weekend? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Anaheim, they got more problems than a math book right now. It's funny what's going on there. Rich, we made quite a bunch of jokes about them in the offseason. So, you know, nothing has changed out there. And they're a mess right now. They fired their manager. You know, they got these star players, and yet what are they doing with them? I'm sure Mr. Trout would like to know the same thing. So I just hope we go out there, show up, and battle and, you know, not lay down to these guys.
Yeah. It could be a trap. And I do hope – well, I like the Sox. I see the Sox win. But I do hope the Angels find a way to break the schneid tonight, because eventually they're going to win. And I'm not going to say they're a good team, especially if Trout doesn't play, but they're not a bad team. And they will be owed some wins. So I'd hate to see them collect those wins against the Mets. So, Anthony, where are you with this?
Could this be a trap? Yes. Do I think it will be a trap? No. I think the Mets will win this series, whether they sweep or they win two out of the three. I have this much confidence, even with all that's gone down so far, I have this much confidence in this team than I've ever had in the past, maybe outside of 2006. So I think that the Mets will take care of business. I don't want to be a pessimistic while this team is, you know, ahead in the standings by 7 games, or what, 17 games over 500. They've played well so far. They have McGill going. They'll have Carrasco going, and they'll have Taijuan Walker going, who's probably due for a good start coming up. So I have full confidence that they will take this series. I want to stay away from being negative whatsoever. The whole thing with Syndergaard, if they were at Citi Field and they took him out of the game, I probably could understand that. But doing it here makes no sense to me. And I do feel that this Angels team is kind of like very Mets, I guess, very Mets of, you know, the past. Their franchise is in, like, peril at this moment. And it's kind of funny that the reasoning behind Noah Syndergaard leaving was there was no direction for this team. We didn't have a manager, and, you know, the front office was in peril. Now he goes to the Angels, and that's exactly what this team is going through right now. So I guess that's a little bit of karma hitting Noah Syndergaard in the face right now for all the smack talking and all the, you know, crap that comes out of his mouth. So it's just, I feel like this Mets team is in the right mode right now, and they will, I think, take two out of three with McGill coming back and with Carrasco going and Walker at least taking two out of the three, I think, is not out of the question at all. And you know what? If they lose two out of the three, so be it. But I'd rather go into it. You know, we have a good team going up against a team that's really struggling and is worse than the Mets, let's be honest. You know, even with Shohei Ohtani, even with, you know, Mike Trout, who I'm not sure if he's injured right now or if he's going to play. I know he was hurt and he's been struggling. The Mets are a better team, and they should go into it thinking that they're the better team because, like Buck said, no one's going to feel bad for them when they lose. No one's going to feel bad for them when they get injured. That's the right way to go into these kind of games, and I think the Mets will pull it out this weekend.
Well, I like your optimism. I really do. And I think, I don't know, you know, you don't know what's going to happen until it does. Now, I'm sure when the Red Sox began this series, they probably thought that it could be a trap series for them, right? Because at that point they had lost 12 in a row and the Red Sox are going in there and lo and behold, they're beating up on them. So actually not beating up on them. You see Michael Wacha threw a complete game shutout, 1-0 shutout the other night. That's almost too much to be believed, but all right. So with all that said, one last thing I think we can touch on before we have Anthony tell us where we can find his work and then we do our last word. One more thing I would like to touch on. It was touched on a bit earlier, which is Syndergaard. I keep saying it. Scherzer. Let's touch on Scherzer. Scherzer, this Wednesday will be 4 weeks since his injury. We were told 6 to 8. He just started throwing off of a mound. So I don't know. Let's just say that he starts making rehab starts 10 days from now. That will be 5.5 weeks. And then he could be on the lower end. So we were told 6 to 8, and it could be that he's back in 6, which would be great. If the Mets can have him back around the 4th of July, that would just be fantastic, even the end of June. So that's a good sign on the horizon. DeGrom, you know, I think Anthony said earlier, we hear very little. I think they're very close to the vest with him. So we're not sure about that. But let's just for a minute talk about Scherzer and DeGrom. And I'm just going to ask you realistically, not in your heart, but in your brain, Mike, given everything, are the Mets going to realize this vision, have Scherzer and DeGrom at the top of the rotation at some point this season? What do you think?
Well, if they go about it carefully, I think they can. And like I said, I'm banking on them for the home stretch. So I'm really not looking to call upon them until late August and September, if the Mets can sustain this first place standing, of course. But I think the return of Scherzer, the return of DeGrom are going to be somewhat synced up with the trade deadline. Billy Eppel is going to see where they stand health-wise, you know, and for the rest of the season, what the needs are. Guesstimate and act accordingly. So, you know, this up until the trade deadline, you know, that's what the plan is, to have all these things coincide with each other, see where they are, and make a determination then whether you can count on them, whether you can't. You know, it's going to be curious. But I do think the Mets are in a position. I do believe we have the rotation depth if everybody performs to their own respective capabilities to remain competitive. And if Scherzer and DeGrom can help us over the final 2 weeks of August, September, and then, you know, obviously we want to play in October, but we can put them off till then. And hopefully they'll be better for it and help the Mets.
So, Anthony, going into this season, all we heard about was Scherzer, DeGrom. You know what happened in late March when DeGrom went down. Realistically speaking, do you see these two guys at the top of the rotation bringing the Mets to the promised land?
I want to say yes. I would like for, you know, the third time to be the charm when it comes to the hype train on our Mets pitchers. Obviously, it failed with Generation K It failed with the youngsters in 15, 16, 17. I would like this to actually work out, and I think it will. DeGrom has never been this injury-prone pitcher, minus what people think over the last couple of years. You know, obviously we had that shortened 2020 season, which, you know, messed with a lot of pitchers. And then we had last year where he was getting injured, batting. He was throwing way harder than any other pitcher was throwing, so I think that affected him as well. I think once he comes back, I think with the knowledge that he's gained and with Scherzer right next to him, that things will work out. I think if they're going to win and if this team is going to go to the promised land, I would have to think it would have to be this year or next year, because Scherzer is getting older, and I don't know how much longer his body is going to be able to hold up. Obviously, he knows his body better than anyone, but, you know, you got to be realistic. He's getting older. DeGrom is getting older. The rotation is going to probably be completely different next year with a lot of these guys hitting free agency. So you're going to have to hope that either this year or next year is going to have to be the year that they win it all, barring injuries and, you know, different players coming in and out. This one of these 2 years is going to have to be the year with these two guys in the rotation.
I think that's probably right. I think, Steve Cohen made it pretty clear that he's going for it, and that's great to hear. I mean, if we stop and think about where we were as Mets fans, you know, as recently as two seasons ago, or we'll make it three because nobody knows about 2020, we didn't sense that kind of a commitment from the front office. They weren't really going to go out and start adding pieces at the trading deadline or taking on a lot of money. We knew that, but the feeling here is just so different this year. And there's just something subtle about the way this team is just has this aura about it. And I think part of it is the ownership commitment is one thing that as fans, we're just not used to, and it just feels so good. So Sam, I'll let you comment on Scherzer, DeGrom, and I think you also had a trade proposal you wanted to run by us.
Well, it's not exactly a proposal because I don't know exactly who I'd include, but it's just a piece that I think we could target. So in terms of those two players, I think Scherzer is the type that's just like, yeah, all right, you know, I got an oblique, but first time I've ever felt that, that's why I wanted to zip off the mound immediately. But Scherzer is one who's just going to be like, I need to battle for this team. I need to push through for this team. And maybe that's part of what we're seeing here. And you know what? I mean, when you have nothing to lose, you're this competitive. You have signed this type of contract. You accept the challenge as a privilege. And, you know, you're probably done it in 3 years. Like, you know, you're going to put pedal to the metal. And I expect Scherzer to do so in the best way possible. I just think he's a baller. Jacob DeGrom, I do think in terms of the velocity that we're talking about, that has been most likely some of the issues. He was healthy for a good port. You know, he was healthy for two Cy Young seasons. Let's remember that. Whether it's catching up to him or not, and whether he adjusts, we shall see. I think whether it be Jacob DeGrom and or the combination of the people involved with everybody we've talked about with this franchise right now, Jeremy Hefner, Buck Showalter, that we should be able to produce the best Jacob DeGrom possible. I always think back to Game 5 of the Dodgers series in 2015, considering he was not yet hitting that velocity, to think like he got himself together to give us the win in that game. And he was not hitting 101 every time. So if they as a collective identify that it's the velocity really destroying what could be a Hall of Fame career, just like in a completely different way it happened to David Wright to destroy a Hall of Fame career, then hopefully they will adjust and continue to produce a Hall of Fame career collectively together as a franchise and an individual.
All right. Well, you know, I think the Mets will be active at the deadline, which is, I think it's August 2nd this year. And, you know, we have a couple of months of a podcast to go before we get to that point. But at this point, it would seem to me that we're seeing the evolution of a ball club right before our eyes. Like last year, you knew that they were on thin ice because they didn't have a lot of major league depth. You know, you were bringing in Jared Eichhoff and DFAing him after he would give up 45 runs in the first inning, right? So you were bringing him in, DFAing and bringing him back because you had no one else. This year, it's a little bit better. You know, they were able to dip down and get David Peterson, who was in the rotation last year before getting hurt, of course. But this year he was depth, a little bit better. I do think they need to add some depth. I think that would be their focus at the deadline. I agree that adding a pitcher would definitely be
required. I'm sorry. I know that you threw another question, and I did not – I failed to answer that in my timeline. But what I was thinking, and I threw this to Mike earlier, was that depending on what's going on with the Cubs, because they're, you know, not they could creep back in there possibly, but – I think that the Mets should target Wilson Contreras. And I think that even with, you know, before completely unloading as to why I think Wilson Contreras, I think that they could even include this long-term potentially, even though I believe he's a free agent. But they need catching help now one way or another to despite what we talked about with James McCann. They need catching help when it comes to the offensive production, and I'm fairly certain Wilson Contreras is also good on defense. So I think that you could even include, even though he's a free agent, you could even include him in the beginning stages of Francisco Alvarez, you know, on a 2-3 deal. And considering that regardless of what we've talked about with the catcher and James McCann, the position, you know, I think he was on a 2-year deal, maybe a 3-year deal, and that is very workable. You could probably also work if you are concerned with putting Tomas Nito down on the farm. You could probably work with three catchers somehow. And make that all work in terms of the end, but you need to do something about this offense, and you need to do something about the catching position, and you could still operate this potentially with a catching prospect in the pipeline.
Well, the thing about Wilson Contreras is he literally just signed an extension with the Cubs. So I believe it was yesterday, the day before.
Jesus.
So
I didn't even catch that, and now I'm embarrassed.
No, I mean, it just happened. So he would have been – I mean, his name had been rumored to the Mets, so they've been talking about it for a while because for that exact reason. I mean, the Mets are thin on catching. You have Alvarez, that's true, but Contreras would have been a great rental, but he's not a rental anymore. And I don't think he's going to be available.
Mike, it was 2 days ago.
No, that's probably the name.
You're right.
What's that, Mike?
Sam threw that my way about 2 days ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Their Cubs are an odd team. You know, the Mets will see them later this season. The Braves see them, as we talked about, next weekend. The Cubs, they spent money on Contreras. They spent money on Stroman. But they're basically rebuilding at this point. And, you know, so while they've spent a little bit, they clearly are rebuilding that franchise, and it's going to be a couple of years for them. And I find them to be a very interesting story, especially in that marketplace. So, gentlemen, I'll throw an open question out. If there's anything else you'd like to discuss, I think we've covered the Mets road trip. We've covered the divisional stuff, you know, with the standings and are we concerned, talked about that, talked about the injuries, the potential for Scherzer and DeGrom. Anything else on your minds before we start to wrap it? I will take that as a no. So, all right, gentlemen. So let's start with Anthony. Anthony, we like to have our guests do what we call a shameless plug about halfway through the show. We didn't get a chance to do that tonight. But what I'd like you to do, if you can, is to tell us about Rising Apple, where you know your work there, where we can find you on social media, and then also tell us about your Subway to Shea podcast. How often do you do it? What's your theme, and where can people find it?
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter at Subway to Shea. Same thing on Instagram at Subway to Shea. I've been working with Rising Apple as a contributor since I think about October, and I write articles here and there. And you could search for me on the About page. It has all the contributors listed there. You click on my name, and you'll see all my articles. The last one I did, I think, was either on Eduardo Escobar needing to step up, and he's done so since I think I wrote that. Or the last other one was the David Peterson on how he's kind of, I think, turned the corner, but now on his last couple starts, he's had a rough going. So it could go either way for me. But mostly I do my podcast, and you can listen to that on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor.fm, Google Podcasts, and I think Pocket Cast is the other one so far. And I do that weekly at the moment. I think once we get to the All-Star break, I'm going to start adding more episodes in, maybe do two a week or one after every series, just to get a little more repetition in. And at some point, I would like to add a YouTube video element to it. So I got that whole thing working on. It's hard to do it with also having to work a job. So this is kind of my like leisure time. So I'm going to try to do as much as I can when I can.
All right. Well, we'd like to thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. So what we typically do is we go around and we ask people for their last word or their last phrase for the evening. And it's something that maybe that's on your mind. It's something you'd like the listeners to think about. Maybe it's something we talked about or did not talk about on the podcast. So just so you get an idea for the format, let's go to Sam first. So Sam, as our chief of podcasting operations, mastermind, grand poobah, all those different things, what would be your last word for tonight?
Stranger Things. I am going to watch the finale of what I believe is the mid-season finale, technically, which is an hour and 40 minutes. Quite the movie for a finale of Stranger Things. My final word is Stranger Things, because Stranger Things have happened than the Mets holding this lead, and I believe they will.
Nice. I like it. So, Anthony, with that as your background, what would be your last word or phrase or thought for the evening?
I'm just going to say to stay positive. This is a tough stretch, but Met fans need to stay positive, and they need to support this team. This is a different team. This is a different run organization, and just support this roster that we have right now. And one of the things that I've said a lot with these injuries is next Met up. So anytime someone gets hurt, it's the next Met up. Tyler McGill coming back, he's the next Met up.
All right. Mike, as one of the founding fathers of the podcast, we'll wrap it up with you. What's your final word for tonight?
June, the month of June. June is a transitional month for the Mets over the last couple of years. In 2019, we finished the month under 500. Last year, we finished 15-15. This year, we're 4-4. So we need to fight and persevere through June. That's been an Achilles heel for us over the last couple of summers. You know, so transition into the warmer days and get better.
That is an interesting, interesting angle on it. You know, as much as June has been horrible, I actually forgot about that. Thanks for reminding me on that. The Mets, I think in 2018, it was an absolutely epically bad June. Like, it was something like 8-20 or something like that.
Yeah.
Worse than that. I don't think they got 8 wins, even.
Horrible. And this year, it just so happens that the scheduling gods, you know, we're not kind to the Mets in June. You know, let's face it, you know, we have a West Coast trip in there. You've got the Brewers. You've got the Astros. Let's not forget about that. The Mets play the Astros 4 times when this month is over. And, you know, the Astros are one of the best teams in baseball. So it's a rough go. But, all right, so my final word for tonight is I'm going to say it's the final phrase of hang in there, because I, of the four of us, I'd say I'm the most concerned. Based on what you guys said early on in the podcast, I just worry about the Braves. I worry that as much as I want to tell myself it's different than last year, could this be a repeat, you know, where they had the nice lead and seemed like everything was going to go well, and then it just collapsed, and it's the collapse. I'm trying to tell myself it's not. Everything is different, different people, different run organization. So I'm going to try to hang in there and not let it get to me. And that, with that, I will say that that brings us to a close on another edition of the Metsian podcast. We'd like to thank Anthony Rivera, as I mentioned earlier, for joining us. We'd like to thank all of you. We wouldn't have a podcast without listeners. So thanks to everybody who may have listened live or will listen on the archived version. And I'd like to thank my partners in podcasting, Mr. Mike LaColant and Mr. Sam Maxwell. And with that said, I'll leave everybody with a very positive thought. And that would be that for the New York Mets, we have a grand total of 3 more games all season that will be played after 8 p.m. our time. So praise God for that. It just seems like they've been playing.
Can I just say one more thing?
Go ahead.
I want to take us out before that. Our theme song of composer, Adam Spiegel, is getting married this week. So let us say congratulations, Adam Spiegel. He's a big Mets fan. So only one way we can finish this, right, Rich? Let's go.
There is only one way to finish
Mets.
It. Let's go, Mets, everybody. 2 more games in this trip,
Mets.
One in Oakland
Mets.
In September.
Mets.
And we're done with California, thank goodness. So let's go, Mets, everybody. Thanks for listening. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Sam.
Mets,
thank you, Anthony. Everybody,